Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is Tim Kirkchin with the Baseball Tonight podcast for Friday, August 14th. On this date in 2009, Felix P.A. of the Orioles hit for the cycle. Willie Mays, Hank Aaron, Babe Ruth, Barry Bonds has never hit for the cycle, but Felix P.A. did. And on this date in 1930, Earl Weaver was born. Earl Weaver is one of the great managers of all time. He taught me so much about the game. And the only story you need to know about Earl was he had an outfielder named Pat Kelly on his team who, during his playing career for the Orioles, joined the ministry. And he waited for the perfect moment to go tell Earl about his big, big change in life. And he finally went to Earl and said, "Earl, I'm going to walk with the Lord." And Earl said, "I'd rather you walk with the bases loaded." That's how Earl did all things. I am filling in for Buster, and stepping in for Taylor Schwenk is Troy Farkas and Travis Rockhold. There were great things that happened last night in baseball, but the number one thing and the one we'll focus on is Mookie Betts. He joined Johnny Mize and Sammy Sosa last night as the only players to have six three-homer games in his career. Betts did it in roughly 1,000 fewer games than Mize and 1,500 fewer games than Sosa. Betts hit three home runs in the first five innings of the game for the third time in his career. Willie McCovey is the only other player to do it even twice in the first five innings. And don't forget, Babe Ruth in his regular season career had two three-homer games. Hank Aaron had one. And David Ortiz, Rafael Palmeiro, and Gary Sheffield, all in the 500 home run club, never had a three-homer game, and Mookie Betts has had six of them already. Before we move on, Troy, I believe there's a podcast out there that you want to tell the fans about.
Yeah, Tim. So reason I haven't been working on Baseball Tonight podcast anymore is because I work on this mixed martial arts podcast, a sport that I know you are a huge fan of, I'm sure. There's a big event this weekend, UFC 252. It is the trilogy fight in the UFC's heavyweight division between Daniel Cormier and Stipe Miocic. This is basically to consider who is the greatest heavyweight fighter of all time. So it's a huge event. We talk about it all week. We had Daniel Cormier on our podcast on Monday. We had Sean O'Malley on Wednesday. He's also fighting. So UFC 252 Saturday. If you want to get prepared for it, check out Ariel Helwani's MMA show, wherever you get your podcast. If you want to watch the fight, visit ESPNplus.com/PPV for more details. Coming up now, Carl Ravage.
All aboard. It's the Ravage Train with Carl Ravage.
And now I'm joined by my dear friend, Carl Ravage. He and I have done Baseball Tonight together for all 22 years that I've been at ESPN. And we do games together from the booth now. Ravi, how you doing, man?
Well, the fact that we've done this for 22 years or been together, I didn't know it was that long. That explains a lot. You know, it explains a great deal of the struggles and the realities of not being on the road and all the things that we miss about being together. But that's a long time. I did not realize that it was 22 years. I didn't even know I've been at ESPN 22 years, let alone work with you. But that's a good sign. That means longevity. That's good.
Yeah. And seriously, Ravi, I did a game with you on Monday night. And then on Wednesday, I did a KBO game with your son, Sam. So what is it like for you as a dad listening to your son do play-by-play? That must be the coolest thing ever.
It's up there, you know, and it is interesting to hear him because I know many people have told me they thought that was me. He sounds a lot like I do. I guess there's some mannerisms that are similar and whatnot, but yeah, I mean, look, you know, it was his idea. I'd be honest, Tim, I had no idea when he went away to college or graduated high school that was a career path he was going to choose. He was very quiet on what he wanted to do once he went to school and then after. And to see somebody, you know, like you with your writing and now turn that into a broadcasting career, it's really neat to see someone who has a passion for something follow through and have some success. So yeah, it's rewarding. I mean, I'll be honest, you know, you try to be objective in what's a very subjective field. I think he does really well. I think he's very good at it. And at that age, I wasn't even thinking about doing play-by-play at ESPN or any other entity. I was finding my way through local television and things like that.
Well, it's a great thing. And switching gears a little bit here. So Mookie Betts last night, Ravi, hit three homers in a game for the sixth time in his career. Johnny Mize, Sammy Sosa, the only other players to do that. And Mookie did it in 1,000 fewer games, basically, than Mize, and 1,500 fewer than Sosa. So when you look, I don't want to call you a Red Sox fan, but you grew up there, for goodness sakes, and you see Mookie Betts, who the Red Sox traded away, get off to a start like this and have another three-homer game. What do you think?
Well, I think it happens on the same day that the Red Sox give up 17 runs and look like a single-A team. The Celtics and Bruins, I think, both lost. And the Patriots are going to start a season without Tom Brady. I think this is a reminder of the comeuppance that Boston sports fans are about to have to deal with in the next few years. Yeah, I mean, look, it's a tough pill to swallow for Red Sox Nation to know that one of the transformational players of his generation, in an era when Mike Trout is playing, Mookie Betts is going to be in the conversation. You know, there's the Jack Nicklaus, Arnold Palmer, Gary Player. There's the Tiger Woods, Phil Mickelson, for a while, David Duvall conversation. I mean, Mike Trout's going to have, you know, Mookie Betts and Clayton Kershaw, and that's what this group is going to be about. And to know that he was once part of your franchise, and now he's not, and a franchise paid him a lot of money, and you believe your franchise was capable of doing the same, you know, for those that are living and dying with the Red Sox, I know it sucks. It really does. It's just a reminder. And look, Mookie's got to be that guy. We all grew up with him, that whatever he does to a level that few others can do it. So the three homers six times, you know, that's the same guy that has four hole-in-ones. That's the same guy that bowls 300 games. He does those things. And there'll be no surprise, you know, when he wins more World Series and wins MVPs. That's that guy. He's the guy we all grew up with. He's just doing it at the highest athletic level.
Before I forget, how many holes in one do you have? Ravi's a really good player.
I have two of those. And again, there's a lot of there's some skill in hitting it at the flag. There's a lot of luck in having it go in the hole.
All right, back to that Red Sox game for a second, Ravi. They didn't just give up 17 runs. They gave up 42 runs in a four-game series. The last time they did that was in 1978 against the Yankees. The Rays had never scored 42 runs in a four-game series, and the Red Sox used two position players to pitch yesterday and an infielder to catch when he had never caught before. Ravi, these are the Red Sox. This is not a bad franchise. See a game like that happening as a Red Sox fan, what do you say then?
Well, again, you keep lumping me in with Red Sox fans, and I have been the first to always suggest, regardless of what we do for a career and objectivity, we all came from somewhere, and you all have family or friends that live where you grew up. And it's not fun to be Barry or Nancy Ravitch right now, or brother Matt Ravitch, watching this, whatever this is. And, you know, it's amazing. You have Sale have surgery. They trade Mookie. There's no price. This is not a reflection of what that baseball club has been like for the last, I don't know, 10 to 12 years. It's not close. It's not a reflection of anything that they're used to. I couldn't really give you much thumbnail on most of the pitchers that pitched last night, let alone the position players. I was in the studio doing the game last night with Eduardo and Chipper, and I had the Red Sox game up. And every time I glanced over to the screen, I was watching a ray round the bases, and sometimes it was the same ray rounding the bases in Hunter Renfro's case. That's not a major league club. That's not a reflection of what you're used to seeing. It's not. They're awful this year, and they're going to be awful. And to some extent, watching the Orioles last night grind out at bats against Jake Arrieta, really being pains in the butt at the plate. I mean, they must have had 40 foul balls. They're better. They seem to care more. You know, you watched that game last night. I did, and this does speak to the Red Sox. The Phillies looked flat. They looked beaten. You have a bunch of superstar players on that team, and you have a bunch of guys that were DFA'd or waiver claimed on the Orioles, and you can see they're fighting like hell to stay employed. They're fighting like hell for their next contract. They were refreshing to watch, as much as it is difficult to see 40 foul balls. They grinded you. And they're better. I mean, they're better. The Red Sox currently are the worst team in that division.
Well, that's an amazing revelation. It's hard to disagree at the moment. And again, Ravi, sorry to be so negative here, but there was some bad bullpen work last night in your game.
Oh, God.
There's bad bullpen work everywhere, and I'm not sure it's even the bullpen's fault. But what do you make of the struggles of our relievers so far this year on the whole?
Well, you know, I think we all watched for a while the KBO. I know we're still doing games, but when there was no Major League Baseball, many people tuned in to watch the KBO. One of the issues with Korean baseball is they generally have two or three starters that are decent, and their bullpens are brutal. They give up run after run. They nibble. They're afraid of contact because the contact is usually homers. It feels like much of what we witnessed watching the KBO presents itself in Major League Baseball, and it's hard to tell what the root cause of it is. We had Joe Girardi yesterday, and the Phillies were, of course, dealing with COVID, not necessarily because of their own players, but teams they were playing, so they had to shut down. And he made the point that some of the guys in the bullpen, their velocity is down, their arms were warm, and then we had to stop, and now we're trying to warm them back up. And, you know, a lot of the bullpen guys, their main weapon is velocity. So whether that's a reason or not, it certainly may be a contributing factor. The other part of this is, given we're playing such a abbreviated and crowded schedule, there's a feeling that when you're down, and you're down three or four runs, rather than use anybody you think can help you win a game, you basically throw in guys that you know are likely to get hit. So while one team has their better relievers in the game, unless it's close, the other team doesn't, and it makes for a very long and painful experience. And as we saw yesterday, you know, the Red Sox used two guys. Neil Walker pitched for the Phillies. Jed Jerko apparently just pitched in relief. That now we're seeing managers say, well, I can't waste an arm because we've got to win as many as we can in a short period of time. If we're losing, this may be the route we go. We're going to lose. So does it really matter if we lose by that many? And that's a troubling trend that we may begin to be seeing. But I don't really know the answer other than what Girardi told us. You know, and there's a general what appears to be fear of strike zones. Like, they nibble. And that's not what you're used to. I mean, that was the beauty of Major League Baseball. And why David Ortiz quit when he could probably still hit 30 homers. Are you kidding? They all throw 100. Why the hell would I want to stay in a game where everybody comes out of the bullpen door throwing 100 miles an hour?
Now, Ravi, this kind of leads to something that you've told me for years, and I always yell at you, but you think we should play 7 innings, all games. Explain that, please.
Well, I mean, initially it was because I think I had had such exposure to 6-inning games. And again, that's through the Little League experience. Again, what I think Major League Baseball needs is urgency in everything they do. Pace of play is a small fraction of the bigger issue, which to me is urgency. It's why the fourth quarter in NBA games, especially the second half of fourth quarters, work. There's urgency. It's why overtime works. I think if you were, and I don't get the impression, Tim, other than these 2020 COVID season of seven-inning doubleheaders, that it has a lot of staying power with the current administration of Rob Manfred, et cetera. But my experience tells me that when you have seven-inning games and you have starters that are throwing four and five innings before they're coming out, most of them, that you then bring in your best arms in innings six and seven, and you have excitement for seven innings. Right now, I know diehard baseball fans, major league players, innings four, five, six, seven, as a player, they drag on. As many fans will attest, they drag on. It's like the argument that you've made and we all make, I don't need to tune into the NBA until the second half of the fourth quarter, until it gets exciting. I don't really need to tune into a hockey game until the third period, unless I want to see every minute. In baseball, it's really hard to commit to 3.5 hours. So you could argue in a 2-2 game, I just really want to watch innings 8 and 9. Let me get to the excitement. It's why we have a runner on second base. You are creating urgency. In the case of the runner, you're manufacturing excitement because you're creating a runner that I don't necessarily think is needed. But the seven innings makes innings 3, 4, and 5 really important. It compacts everything. It creates urgency. It's not just about making the game last 2.5 hours. You can have incredibly exciting games that last 1 hour and 50 minutes and 3 hours. But you need urgency. And that's really my argument for seven-inning games. Every inning, every at-bat takes on added importance and added significance. And I think given the way that we use bullpens and our pitchers, it would make for a better game.
Well, speaking of seven innings, Ravi, the Cardinals are going to play a lot of seven-inning games coming up because they haven't played since July the 29th. They're going to resume their schedule, it appears now, on Saturday, and they are going to attempt to play 55 games in 44 days. The last team that tried to do that was in 1945. Wouldn't you agree that what the Cardinals are up against is significant? What are we going to do with the Cardinals having to play 55 in 44 days?
Well, thank you very much for making me feel Buster comfortable with a wouldn't you agree. I appreciate that. I'm now aware that you are officially hosting for Buster, who is probably, knowing Buster and his, is he on vacation?
Yeah, he's in a boat right now fishing, I'm sure.
Right. Or either that, or he's traveling to a historical site, or he's on the moon. Buster never just does nothing on a vacation. So thank you for asking me, wouldn't you agree? They're in trouble. And again, I go back to what we've witnessed here in the last few days. If the Cardinals are down 6-1 in the fourth inning, who are you going to pitch for innings 5, 6, and 7 when you have another game that you're trying to win, and then you have a 9-inning game the next day that you are trying to win? At some point, you're going to tap out of games that you are in because you are just going to concede a loss. So they're in a lot of trouble. It's going to be a massive challenge. I also believe that many teams, whether it's rain out and God forbid it be a COVID outbreak, are going to be in similar situations with seven-inning doubleheaders. And you literally are going to have to now decide in the middle of a game, if you're losing by 3, 4 runs, we're going to do our best, but there's a good chance we're going to lose this one because I need to win the next game and then the game after that and the game after that. So it's a massive challenge for the Cardinals for sure. I think Adam Wainwright is scheduled to start one of the games on Saturday. I love Waino. He's competitive as anybody. He's a great guy. But you're asking some players who are longer in the tooth to do things that they haven't done in a long time, and your expectations for them are such that we need you really badly, and we need you to give us 5 or 6 innings because we have a 7-inning game right after this. And then tomorrow we have 2 more. It's really daunting.
Well, speaking of really challenging, I'll leave you with this, Ravi. You've been doing play-by-play for a long time at ESPN, and you and I have been partners mostly with Eduardo Perez in the booth for 5 years. What has it been like for you to try to call a major league game when one analyst is 500 miles away, another one is 1,100 miles away, and the game is 3,000 miles away? What has it been like for you as a premier play-by-play guy to try to call a game when you're sitting by yourself in a studio?
Well, I mean, we've had this conversation. The technology is anxiety driving. The beautiful part of our group is the relationships we have. And while you have distinguished the mileage, if you were in another room and Eduardo was 15 feet away, but I couldn't see him, it doesn't matter if it's thousands of miles or 7 feet. If you're not literally in a booth together or you're not in the same room together where you have the ability to have eye contact. But beyond that, I'm not as concerned as a play-by-play guy about those things because, in a lot of ways, you and Eduardo and me are like a family. We know each other. There's a rhythm to the broadcast because you've done it for so long together. You could, in a sense, do it blindfolded, not worrying about stepping on each other and that part of it. But when technology drives people crazy and you remove the comfort level of being together and the security blanket that this is all going to work, well, that's the nervous flyer every time you get on a plane. Imagine getting on an airplane and being so nervous, that you are incapacitated for the entirety of the flight until the wheels touch down. When you have in the back of your mind that my partner is struggling because the technology's no good, and this has nothing to do with anyone's effort, because as we've seen, the effort to make this stuff work is Herculean, but that stuff is anxiety driving. And as a result, you're never comfortable. You can't sit there and converse like you normally would. And that's, that's for us to overcome. And I think it's changed greatly in the last couple of weeks. But that's the biggest, to me, the biggest challenge is not calling the game. It's not the dynamics with you and Eduardo. It's worried that there's a delay and you can't hear the other person. That makes it very uneasy and uncomfortable.
Yeah, totally agree. All right, we're doing games Tuesday and Wednesday of next week. We have baseball tonight on Sunday. You have a game on Sunday. There's a lot coming up. Thanks for joining me, Ravi. Hey, you guys are great. Hey, you guys stink.
I am now, because of the schedule just laid out, I'm going to go to bed for the next 2 days. I'm just going to go to sleep.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us today, Ravi. And I can't stress this enough, how cool that was, at least for me, to do a game with you one night and a game with your son 2 days later. It doesn't get any better than that.
You're the best. I love you, buddy. I'll see you soon.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11 ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of the show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Buster. Just go to Indeed.com/Buster right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Buster. Terms and conditions apply.
Joined by Todd Radom, graphics artist and stadiums expert. And Todd, I must begin this little segment with, I have covered a major league game in 60 different stadiums. That includes Fort Bragg, that includes Williamsport, Omaha, where I only did a game here and there, but 60 games, you gotta admit, that's pretty impressive.
Tim, I am always impressed by you. It's good to hear your voice again. 60 games is impressive, but you got to figure out a way to get to Buffalo this season. Is it possible?
I've done a minor league game there, and yes, maybe Buffalo will make it 61. It's a very important number in baseball history. Maybe I need to get to Buffalo. And my daughter, Kelly, married Mark Kinahan, who is from Buffalo. So another reason to go. How about that?
It all comes full circle, Tim.
All right, so what do you have today stadium-wise, Todd?
All right, so all season long we've been talking stadiums, we're going around the horn, and we are in the American League West, and today we're going to be talking about Minute Maid Park and the Astrodome too, Tim. So looking at some notes for Minute Maid Park, amazingly it opened in 2000, it's 20 years old. I mean, the only way you get to 60 stadiums in your case, and having witnessed something like 52 in my case, is having attained a certain age, but that's okay. Minute Maid Park, 20 years old. The former Enron Field, people forget about that. So for me, the place still shines brightly after these two decades. It looks great. It's a lot more cluttered looking than it used to be. Tim, we talk about the aesthetics of ballparks every week. For me, this ballpark gets huge ups for the adaptation of Union Station, the city's 1911 train station, as the main portal into the park. I love entering the stadium via that Union Station lobby. It really is a very special experience. And each and every week we talk about what makes a ballpark special and gives it a particular sense of place. Well, that Union Station entrance gives it a sense of place for me. I got a couple of other notes, and then I'm going to ask you a few questions. Some of the other pluses here, the gigantic, heroic, Texas-sized arches out in left field. Even if they've been covered up with the signage and other stuff over the years, they're still kind of a great element. The interior of the ballpark has a lot of visual appeal to me. The sight lines are good. It's a good place to watch a game. And I do love those standing room seats in the outfield. A couple of other things. Tim, I'm going to ask you about this, but I kind of miss Tal's Hill.
I don't miss Tal's Hill. Look, I love Tal Smith. I know what they were trying to do there, and it was a cool feature, a unique feature, but I always worried someone's going to run up that hill and get hurt. But I saw a couple guys run up that hill, make a catch, and run back down, which was pretty cool, but I'm kind of glad it's gone. I'm sorry about that. As for Minute Maid, if I may, I was there for the Albert Pujols home run off of Brad Lidge. And I can tell you, after the Metrodome, which was the loudest ballpark I've ever been in, Minute Maid Park was the second loudest park I've ever been in. And the noise in that place when Brad Lidge was ready to deliver to Albert Pujols and take the Astros to the next round, and then Pujols hit it over the train tracks, and I'll never forget this. It went from the second loudest park ever to the quietest place I've ever been in. He completely silenced 50,000 people. It was amazing.
I think that ball is still going, by the way.
Right, and by the way, so the Astros are now flying to St. Louis after the game. And Brad Ausmus, the mischievous catcher for the Astros, gets on the PA system in the airplane. They've just lost on this unbelievable home run. And he says to the players on the team, and they think like he's a secretary, I mean, a flight attendant. He says, okay, everyone, I just want you to look out to the left side of the airplane because the Albert Pujols home run ball is still traveling. We can see it out of the left side of the airplane. And that's how cool and loose that Astros team was, because then they went in and behind Roy Oswalt won game 6 in St. Louis. So, yes, that ball might still be traveling.
It's like a satellite. It's still going. So a couple of other things real quick, and then we're going to talk about the Astrodome briefly. But to me, the location's a plus. It's out in the periphery of downtown. Tim, each and every week, Buster brings up the utility of certain ballparks. He's all about utility. And the utility of Minute Maid Park for somebody like you, somebody like Buster, is probably undeniable. First of all, air conditioning, the greatest invention perhaps in the history of man. People in Houston would probably attest to that. But the fact that you've got a hotel right across the street, you can walk across, sweat for about 28 seconds, and then be in the ballpark, that's pretty good, right?
Yes, I rate every favorite stadium based on how easy is it going to be for me to cover the game. And walking to a ballpark is the number one criteria for me. You can do that at Minute Maid. You can do that in St. Louis. Give me a hotel where I can walk to the ballpark. And the other thing is, Todd, give me a stadium where I can walk downstairs from the press box to the clubhouse, so I don't have to wait at an elevator with 400 other people. Give me a stairwell where I can get to the clubhouse, and that is the second most important criteria for me.
This has come up before, Tim, so you and Buster, you know, it's an interesting point of view for us civilians. I'd also imagine the fact that you guys have to wear a suit. I'm thinking about Texas around this time of year, Houston in particular, just a little bit humid. It's probably nice to have air conditioning and easy access to these places.
Yes, I covered the Rangers in Texas for 4 years, and they had like a streak one of those years where it was over 100 degrees for like 41 straight days. And there was a giant temperature gauge at the stadium, at the old ballpark in Arlington. And I can't tell you, Todd, how many times we started a 7 o'clock game with a reading of 100 or greater. That's how hot it was in Texas, and that's why air conditioning at Minute Maid is so important.
Yeah, we just talked about the Rangers' various stadiums and my memories of having been to Old Arlington Stadium for a game in June, you know, 97 degrees at first pitch. Not a whole lot of frills and wonderful stuff going on there, but the antithesis of that would be the eighth wonder of the world, the Astrodome. What do you got on that, Tim?
Well, I covered a lot of games in there. I actually like the Astrodome because of the air conditioning. It was, though, incredibly dark. It was enormous. You got a ball out of that place back in the late 70s, mid 80s, you were really doing something. But because it was indoors, you could hear the crack of the bat and the pop of the catcher's mitt like better than any place, because the sound just reverberated. And Roger Clemens once famously said that he loved to go to the Astrodome to listen to Nolan Ryan warm up in the bullpen before a game. These are two Texas power pitchers, and Clemens loved that sound of hearing Ryan throwing 100 in the bullpen and hear that beautiful sound of the ball hitting the catcher's mitt. I know exactly what that sounds like because I heard it in the Astrodome a lot. So that was my favorite part of that dank, dark ballpark, was the sounds that you heard in there.
That's a great story, and I have to say I am very, very happy, as a lot of people are, that the place is being preserved, because it's really this kind of singular, audacious monument to can-do spirit, and just an amazing, amazing place, really cool-looking place, and of course, being a visual guy and a uniform designer like I am, I will always associate the Astrodome with those multicolored seats and the Astros' very singular rainbow uniforms.
Yes, love those uniforms. They were hard to read sometimes, and I'm no uniform expert like you, but I kind of like those old Astro uniforms.
A very signature thing for them. And that's a perfect segue for us because we've got our weekly quiz. So Tim and Troy, you're going to be pinch hitting here for Buster and for Taylor. And I have a uniform question, but, you know, it's ABCD. You got a 25% chance. So if you guys are ready, let's do it. Here we go. In 1963, Tim, the Baltimore Orioles, see, I've aimed this right for your heart. They made a uniform change, and they opted for block lettering, no script on the home jerseys. Who was responsible for the design of this look? Was it A, future manager Earl Weaver? Was it B, outfielder Jackie Brandt? Was it C, general manager Lee McPhail? Or was it D, Baltimore County executive Spiro Agnew? Who designed the Baltimore Orioles block-lettered home uniforms that debuted in 1963? Earl Weaver, Jackie Brandt, Lee McPhail, or Spiro Agnew? Taylor, you go first.
All right, well.
I'm Troy. Jeez. Sorry.
It's all good. It's not the first time. Well, Todd, I don't appreciate this question, A, because Tim is the ultimate baseball historian, and B, you give a question to him that is right out of his backyard. I don't know who B is, this Brandt's character. I've heard of everyone else, but I'm going to go with Spiro Agnew just because I want to, and it's a really cool name.
All right, look, I just told you guys I'm the furthest thing from an expert on stadiums and especially uniforms. And just because I covered the Orioles in the late 70s and in the mid-80s doesn't mean I know anything about uniforms in 1963. So I'm going to say it's not Spiro Agnew. It's not Earl Weaver. I'm going to say it's Jackie Brandt because no one could have come up with Jackie Brandt out of nowhere, Todd, unless he had something. Mm. So the answer is I don't know, but I'm going Jackie Brandt.
Deductive reasoning, Tim, you got it. Gosh, Jackie Brandt. Brandt. It was Jackie Brandt. Jackie Brandt at the conclusion of the 62 season literally said, "Our uniforms stink." And the club said, "Yeah, well, go ahead, do something about him." He designed these block-lettered Orioles home uniforms, which are such an outlier because they've always had script in one iteration or the other, with the exception of those. And it was Jackie Brandt. So, Tim, you are a uniform genius, certified.
Thank you. I'm one for one. And when I hopefully host this podcast again, hopefully I'll go 2-for-2. By the way, Larry Anderson, the old pitcher, he was a terrible hitting pitcher. He used to say if he was 2-for-2, he should be hitting 2,000, not 1,000. Because double 1-for-1, he should be hitting 2,000. All right, I'm hitting 1,000. That's all that matters.
All right. Good job, Tim.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, the clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by.
Bleacher Tweets.
Tim, I've got a couple Bleacher Tweets for you this morning. The first one comes from Josh Neufeld, at Josh Neufeld. "Hey, Tim, I am so grateful for the pod during this cray-cray MLB season." That means crazy, Tim, if you didn't know. "Can you tell us about these alternate sites that each team operates? Do they play games to stay sharp, play against each other? What is it?"
Well, it's really confusing, but what they're doing is they're taking BP every day. They're playing squad games. They're playing sim games because they have to try to stay sharp. This is really difficult to do. As we know, Troy, the only way to simulate a major league game is to play a major league game. And when you're playing against your teammates in a squad game or just taking a lot of BP, it's not the same. So these teams are having trouble, I would think, keeping guys sharp because they're just not at the competitive major league level when you're just taking BP or playing a sim game against your teammates.
Final tweet this morning comes from friend of the show, Debbie Gammons Brown, at D Gammons Brown. Hey, Tim, if you could only get one word to describe the 2020 baseball season, what would it be?
Well, is cray-cray one word two? Because that's what this season has been. I mean, take your choice. Crazy, bizarre, weird, strange. It has to be one of the four. We interviewed Dusty Baker the other day of the Astros. He is the wisest, worldliest, coolest guy ever. He has seen everything in this world, good and bad. And we asked him, what has this season been like? And he said, Tim, I've never seen anything like this, not anything close. That's what we're all going for. So I'll pick the word since Cray Cray has a hyphen in it. I'm going to say this season has been bizarre, and it will continue to get more bizarre as we move along.
You heard it here first. Tim Kirchen says 2020 baseball has been Cray Cray. Thank you for the Bleacher tweets this morning. Keep them coming every day. Buster will be back next week. Taylor will be back next week once they stop, you know, being lazy and floating down lazy rivers. Keep them coming. Hashtag Bleacher tweets every day.
And thanks so much for joining us today on the Baseball Tonight podcast. I did it three times this week. This is so much fun, but I can't wait for Buster to get back from vacation on Monday. Everybody, have a great weekend.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, don't forget to listen to the Fantasy Focus podcast. Check out all podcasts at ESPN.com/podcenter. Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.